Dead. I'll be back to continue into the second hour of the broadcast.
Be sure to listen to The Church at Kaweah every Saturday and Sunday at 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. Pacific Time. The Church at Kaweah is a Lordship Church under the sole authority of Jesus Christ. You may contact The Church at Kaweah by calling 559-561-4860. That's 559-561-4860. And let them know how much you're being blessed. Thank you.
Imagine that this is your daughter.
What do you want?
Now you get to decide how this scene ends. Or...
Stop, Earl!
Some misinformed people want to take away your daughter's choice between rape and self-defense. We're pro-choice on self-defense. Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. JPFO.org.
Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Continue the second hour, and certainly this information about Lost Again, a warning by Henry Lamb, is right on the money. And you can see the Law of the Sea Convention on the website, AmericanExpose.com. It's up there. It's there for you to see. And it's most important for you to view. Most important. From Jan Lemprecht, AfricanCrisis.org, he states that Mandela was in London recently, that's Nelson Mandela, looking decidedly Russian in his dress. There he was, the most famous man in the world, begging the rich countries for $50 billion in aid to Africa. Jan Lemprecht is in South Africa, and here in South Africa, he says much was made of the fact that the USA refused to write off Africa's debt in the crazy way that socialist Tony Blair wishes. But then, stepped the Lord thy God, Nelson Mandela, and of course, America, immediately saw the goodness of life, or so it was repeated here. In his book, Government by Deception, available on Amazon.com, Jan Lemprecht stated quite clearly that in his opinion, this is a tactic aimed at getting other countries and businesses to do the work of Karl Marx himself. He pointed out how in South Africa, Saint Mandela runs around begging for money from Microsoft and any other company he can get to. Of course, Jan Lemprecht says, I must not whine too much about this money these blacks run around the world begging for, because it is all coming here However, being honest, I merely wish to inform people overseas that this money is all going to be wasted. I've said this many times, and the historical facts are there to prove it. You can write off the debt of Africa this time, and in a few years, you can write off the whole debt again and again a few years later. And I'm telling you about up front, people up front, that 10 years or more, Africa will be poorer than it is now, even if the world's caught up with the $50 billion in the write-off of debt, which Mandela wants. And he says, mark my words, you people have been warned by whites who live here and who have seen how your well-intentioned gifts are stolen, misused, and generally wasted. And even if it goes where it should, the black Africans are such that within a few years, they will ruin whatever it was that was built with the money. All across Africa, from north to south, east to west, stand failed foreign aid projects. It is the only continent that has gone backwards since being decolonized, and I'm willing to bet that no continent has ever had as much aid as Africa. The good intentions of foreign governments are many. The extent of which foreign nations will grow to help blacks is amazing, and yet much of it comes to naught. How many times have you seen UN and other programs to teach blacks to farm, for example, yet Africa is producing less and less of the food it needs? Sometimes the extent of foreign aid is staggering. I have a friend in Botswana who used to do consulting work for a bank there. He told me how the German government suddenly decided that this bank needed some new computer system, and hey presto, the Germans give the money for free to this bank to have this computer system written for. My friend told me that these things go on all the time. Western governments are constantly trying to help blacks here and there, and they put up the hard cash. They look for all manner of excellent projects, and yet, despite all these things being done, these countries often move forward at best at a snail's pace. And the minute the aid stops, the countries fall back into a ruin. Nothing ever lasts. This is rather extensive and a little more. It looks to me as if people outside Africa will have to waste money or waste many, many billions more before they learn the lessons that Africa is a bottomless pit. Apparently, tens of billions of dollars of stolen donor money lie in Swiss bank accounts. I once read that African leaders have enough money in their Swiss bank accounts to pay off one-third of Africa's debt, but you will never see them offer to pay as much as 1 cent. People have yet to learn that you give an inch and Africans will take a mile. In fact, they will demand several miles. This is extremely long, and I don't really have the time to get into this, but you can certainly see where his mindset is, and I can relate to certain thoughts that he has being directed at us and on us. Let's go to this article and see where it covers. It's entitled IMF Looks at Gold Sale Options for Debt Relief by Andrew Balls, Chris Giles, and someone else's name that I can't even bother to pronounce, dated February 6th. It states the International Monetary Fund is preparing a report on the potential sale of a portion of its gold reserves, any move that would help fund debt relief for poor countries, but could unsettle the markets by threatening a drop in the price of gold. Finance ministers from the Group of Seven countries, meeting in London at the weekend, asked Rodrigo Rato, you've heard of me talk about him before, IMF Managing Director, to make proposals to the fund's shareholders at its April meeting. The IMF values its store of 3,217 tons of gold at about $8.5 billion. about a fifth of the market value. Poor countries owe about $11 billion to the IMF. If the IMF sold large quantities of gold, it could finance the debt owed by its poor countries. An alternative option is to be studied would be to revalue the gold in the IMF's accounts. This would strengthen its balance sheet, against which it could then write off lending to poor countries. But this is seen as an accounting gimmick that would do nothing to free up real resources within the fund. Gordon Brown, UK Chancellor, who has long supported making better use of the IMF's gold, said the agreed move was an important step towards debt relief for the poor countries following a G7 meeting that focused on development aid and on Africa. Gold-producing countries sensitive to its price opposed sales by the IMF or by central banks. But Trevor Manuel, South Africa's finance minister, told reporters that South Africa would not necessarily oppose sales as long as the process was carefully managed. Opposition to gold sales still exists within the G7, however. John Taylor, U.S. Secretary, Under Secretary for International Affairs, said the U.S. was, quote, not convinced that gold sales is a necessary way to do debt relief, end quote. Canada also opposed gold sales. Ralph Goodall, finance minister, said Canada would instead be prepared to fund its share of the poor country's debt. An IMF official who declined to be named said the fund would not make recommendations on the use of its gold for debt relief, but present the pros and cons of various options. Quote, this is the kind of thing the G7 has to find a consensus on, and it is a political decision that will require the backing of all of the IMF shareholders, end quote, said the insider. U.S. skepticism in part reflects concerns that gold sales would require congressional approval. This might be tricky at a time when the administration is attempting to squeeze domestic programs. The White House will unveil its budget for 2006 fiscal year today, the official start of negotiations with Congress. The G7 communique repeated its statement on currencies, calling for, quote, more flexibility in exchange rates, end quote, where this was lacking notably in China. China was a guest at the meeting. Zhao Jingchan, central bank governor, said the renminbi was not substantially overvalued and China would follow its own timetable for moving to a more flexible regime rather than being rushed by the G7. And the source of this information is newsft.com. That's http://news.ft.com. Somewhat very, very interesting. Well, let's go to a new direction here at this stage. Where do we go from here? Oh yeah, let's cover this, mainly because it's probably not being covered by anyone else. The United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, that's the UNFCCC, and they talk about Kyoto enters into force on 16 February 2005. There are 8 days to entry into force. Oh yes. 8 days into entry into force. 8 days. What does that mean to us? There are going to be many celebrations that I cover tonight or this afternoon on Melody's broadcast. The Discount Gold and Silver Trading Hour, her number is 800-375-4188 to deal with your documented direction for gold and silver. And we're talking about Australia. They have a participation meeting and a celebration about the Kyoto Protocol. Some 8 years after its inception, the Kyoto Protocol will finally enter into force on 16 February. The NSW Premier's Greenhouse Advisory Panel will host a cocktail reception on this significant occasion. It will start with a welcome by Martin Wilder, Interim Chair, NSW Greenhouse Advisory Panel and Partner, Baker and McKenzie. The comments by leading players in the global carbon market. Oh, amazing. Anyway, I just go down this. Brussels, Belgium is going to have a celebration. More Brussels, Belgium. Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Rio de Janeiro. There's a UN building in Rio de Janeiro. Did you know that? Yes, they have their own UN building. Much going on in Canada to celebrate the Kyoto Protocol. Vancouver as well. Toronto as well. Whitehorse as well. My gosh, there's much celebration going on in Canada. I'm sure Canada is pretty well disarmed, just like Australia is very well disarmed, aren't they? Bonn, Germany, they're disarmed in Germany. They're having a Kyoto Protocol celebration. New Delhi, India, they're having a Kyoto Protocol celebration, and they're more than likely disarmed as well. Indonesia, Bogor. Oh, many countries are celebrating the Kyoto Protocol. This is not a good thing, because they're claiming that industrialization has destroyed the planet. That's a bold-faced lie. This afternoon I covered it's a warmer world, but does that mean Armageddon? And it states that when bears wake early from hibernation, Australia suffers its worst drought in 100 years. And multiple hurricanes hammer Florida. Should we believe the end is nigh? That's the nub of a debate over the human impact on global warming, which pits scientists who say such anomalies are signs of impending doom against those who say they are evidence that the Earth's climate has been chaotic. I mean, those signs of warming, for instance, Algeria had its worst snow in 50 years last month. This month, 141 countries will attempt the best effort to arrest a forecasted continued rise of global temperatures by bringing into force the Kyoto Protocol. And there's more to this, but you get the picture. You see what's going on. You see what's being generated and implemented. More UN command and control structure. That's what it's all about. That's what's being generated, Addison Honest. On the website AmericanExpose.com, under that statement that I've covered over and over again, ad nauseum, from the World Heritage Treaty, 17 December 1975, as I typed it out verbatim and sent it to Bill, and that's one of the projects Bill put together on the website. The World Heritage Treaty, 17 December 1975, Article 11, Section 4, where it states the committee shall establish, keep up to date, and publish whenever circumstances shall require, under the title, quote, List of World Heritage in Danger, end quote, a list of the property appearing in the World Heritage for the conservation of which major operations are necessary and for which assistance has been requested under this convention. This list shall contain an estimate of the cost of such operations. The list may include only such property forming part of the cultural and natural heritage as is threatened by serious and specific dangers, such as the threat of disappearance caused by accelerated deterioration, large-scale public or private projects, or rapid urban or tourist development projects, destruction caused by changes in the use or ownership of the land, major alterations due to unknown causes, abandonment for any reason whatsoever, the outbreak or the threat of an armed conflict, calamities and cataclysms, serious fires, earthquakes, landslides, volcanic eruptions, changes in water level, floods and tidal waves. The committee may at any time, in case of urgent need, make a new entry in the list of World Heritage in Danger and publicize such entry immediately. Well, we just had the tsunami. It was a tidal wave. What are they going to do? They're going to create sustainable communities. They're going to have no human habitat zones. We have the map up there now, finally, that correlates to that statement. The simulated reserve and biosphere reserve, the simulated reserve and corridor system to protect biodiversity, as mandated by the Convention on Biological Diversity, the Wildlands Project, UN and U.S. Man in the Biosphere Program, and various UN-U.S. Heritage Programs and NAFTA. See, NAFTA is a big player in Agenda 21. And you learn about core reserves and corridors where there will be little or no human use. You learn about buffer zones, which are highly regulated for use. And there are a few normal use zones of cooperation. You learn about Border 21 and La Paz sidebar agreement of NAFTA, 124-mile wide international zone of cooperation, which is actually 150 miles on this side of the border now by executive order. This map is vitally important to connect the dots to what's being developed. And this map was constructed from core buffer and corridor area perimeters from the Wildlands Project by Dr. Michael Kaufman. We have it up on the site now, finally. And it's only because so few people are doing so much that it took so long to do this. And that's the problem. That is a major problem. You learn about the Global Fire Monitoring Center. You learn about the Convention on Biological Diversity. You can go right to it now on the website. You can learn about the Rewilding Project. That's right there on the website, AmericanExpose.com. The Global Fire Monitoring Center is basically all-encompassing, monitoring every fire in the world. Why would they be doing that? To move communities or populations to sustainable communities. That's what it's all about. That's what's being done and driven and directed. In the meantime, we have the Framework Convention Alliance for Tobacco Control from the UN system. This briefing sets out to answer as straightforward as way as possible some of the questions most frequently asked about the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control by interested parties such as non-governmental organizations, decision-makers, and journalists. And they ask, what is the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control? How could the FCTC further international tobacco control? What is the timetable for the FCTC? Will the FCTC be legally binding and enforceable? Why do we need an international treaty on tobacco control? How will the FCTC affect the economies of the countries which are heavily dependent on growing tobacco? It's all here. It's all in three pages. And so we have the FCTC, Framework Convention for Tobacco Control, is a legally binding treaty which was negotiated by the 192 member states of the World Health Organization, the world's first public health treaty. The FCTC contains a host of measures designed to reduce the devastating health and economic impacts of tobacco. The final agreement reached in May 2003, after nearly 4 years of negotiations, provides the basic tools for countries to enact comprehensive tobacco control legislation. Key provisions in the treaty encourage countries to enact comprehensive bans on tobacco advertising, promotion, and sponsorship, obligate the placement of rotating health warnings on tobacco packaging that cover at least 30% of the principal display areas that can be included, or that can include pictures or pictograms. It goes on. It's up on the website, American Exposé, the Framework Convention Alliance for Tobacco Control. Oh, boy. So we we go back to the Law of the Sea Convention and the Law of the Sea Treaty. It's on the website, AmericanExpose.com, towards the top. United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea was opened for signature at Montego Bay, Jamaica, on 10 December 1982. What happened on 10 December 1948? The Universal Declaration of Human Rights. What happened on 10 December 1998? Implementation of human rights treaties by Executive Order 13107, signed by President Clinton, mandating government agencies to implement human rights treaties. Everything has significance. Everything is amazing. It blew me away watching the Super Bowl, watching the soldiers from the Second World War being honored during halftime. I believe it was halftime. And the proud wearers of the Congressional Medal of Honor showing up. Showing off their five-pointed pentagram, their upside-down five-pointed star, Lucifer's symbol. That's just the way it is. That's the Congressional Medal of Honor, listeners. It's on the website, AmericanExpose.com. So back to this, it entered into force 12 years later on 16 November 1994. We're talking about the Law of the Sea. Entered into force 12 years later on 16 November 1994. What happens on 16 November 2005? The Kyoto Protocol. A subsequent agreement relating to the implementation of Part 11 of the convention was adopted on 28 July 1994 and entered into force on 28 July 1996. This agreement and Part 11 of the convention are to be interpreted and applied together as a single document. The origins of the convention date from 1 November 1967, when Ambassador Arvid Prado of Malta addressed the General Assembly of the United Nations and called for, quote, an effective international regime over the seabed and the ocean floor beyond a clearly defined national jurisdiction, end quote. This led to the convening in 1973 of the Third United Nations Conference on the Law of the Sea, which after 9 years of negotiation adopted the convention. It's there on the website, AmericanExpose.com. Very important to connect these dots, listeners. There's much to this, but I don't want to elaborate on it too much more. Too much other stuff going on. Here we see the UN International Law Commission, Convention on the Law of the Non-Navigational Uses of International Water Courses, 1997. Parties to the present convention, conscious of the importance of international water courses and the non-navigational uses thereof in many regions of the world. Oh, boy. Having in mind Article 13, Paragraph 1A of the Charter of the United Nations, which provides that the General Assembly shall initiate studies and make recommendations for the purpose of encouraging the progressive development of international law and its codification. In other words, bringing them all together, just like what Condoleezza Rice was talking about today, trying to mend the fences with France. Whether she had any success or not, I doubt it. Many countries are getting wise to the setup in place. But they'll be dealt with eventually. That's why I have this here. Dated November 28, 2004. Top general warns Iran not to underestimate U.S. military. A top U.S. commander is warning Iran and others against thinking they can exploit the U.S. military because its ground troops are fighting two major wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And this is by Dennis Cook of the Associated Press, this information. Quote, why the Iranians would want to move against us in an overt manner that would cause us to use our air and naval power against them would be beyond me, end quote, said Army General John Azevedo. I guess it would be John Azevedo, or Azevedo. The head of the U.S. Central Command said in an interview on the way to his headquarters here from Afghanistan. Some members of Congress, including Democratic Senator Carl Levin of Michigan and Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona, have expressed concern that there is a shortage of U.S. troops and such a scenario might tempt reactions such as Iran and North Korea to increase terrorist activity to develop weapons of mass destruction. Well, the draft will be coming into place. That will be happening very, very shortly. And that is the way it is. Everybody gets on board. Everybody works together. Everybody makes a difference. Everybody exposes Agenda 21. What kind of chance do we have then? It's your responsibility as well.
What do caves and concrete bridges have in common? It's coming up next on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
Have you ever been in a cave? If you have, perhaps someone has told you that the rock formations hanging down from the ceiling, called stalactites, are thousands or even tens of thousands of years old. Scientists tell us that stalactites take 100 years on average to grow just 1 inch. But how accurate is this figure? Stalactites grow when water seeps through limestone rock, dissolving the limestone in the process. When this water-containing dissolved limestone emerges from the roof of the cave, it hangs for a moment and, in a current of air, some of this water evaporates, causing the limestone to deposit. Finally, the remaining water drops to the floor of the cave and continues to evaporate and deposit. In Worcester, Ohio, there is a concrete railroad bridge which had one stalactite growing under it that was over 12 inches long. Had the railroad bridge been standing for more than 1,200 years? Obviously not. In fact, the bridge had been cleaned of stalactites only 12 years before. Nor is this situation unusual. More than 300 stalactites were counted growing under bridges in just this one city, and stalactites are not hard to find under concrete bridges in most cities. So we take so many things which evolutionists tell us about the world at face value, even if they contradict the Bible. And before we start taking men's word on faith, we should take what the Creator says in the Bible at face value. He knows much more than all men put together and is to be trusted above all men.
For a free copy of our Creation Resource Catalog, call us toll-free at 1-800-42-BIBLE. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
In this day of economic uncertainty and soaring unemployment, safe investments are often hard to find. But investing in the precious metals is the safest investment of all, because gold and silver is real money. Government-printed currency is not. Call Melody Cedarstrom at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company at 1-800-375-4188. Melody has been helping people secure their financial future for over 10 years. While others in the business claim honesty, Melody will deliver. Give her a call, 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
Thank you.
and welcome back to the broadcast. As we go back to this International Law Commission Convention on the Law of the Non-Navigational Uses of International Watercourses, dated 1997, listeners. Considering that successful codification and progressive development of the rules of international law regarding non-navigational uses of international watercourses would assist in promoting and implementing the purposes and principles set forth in Articles 1 and 2 of the Charter of the United Nations, taking into account the problems affecting many international watercourses resulting from, among other things, increasing demands and pollution, expressing the conviction that a framework convention will ensure the utilization, development, and conservation, management, and protection of international watercourses and the promotion of the optimal and sustainable utilization thereof for present and future generations. What a mouthful. How regurgitatory does it get? Listen carefully. Affirming the importance of international cooperation and good neighborliness in this field, aware of the special situation. Once again, aware of the special situation and the needs of developing countries, recalling the principles and recommendations adopted by the United Nations Conference on Environment and Development of 1992 in the Rio Declaration and Agenda 21, recalling also the existing bilateral and multilateral agreements regarding the non-navigational uses of international watercourses, mindful of the valuable contribution of international organizations, both governmental and non-governmental, to the codification and progressive development of international law in this field, appreciative of the work carried out by the International Law Commission on the law of non-navigational uses of international watercourses, bearing in mind United Nations General Assembly Resolution 49/52 of 9 December 1994, have agreed as follows. Ah, oh, man. Article 1, Article 2, Article 3, Article 4, it goes on and on and on. It's big, people. It's on the website, AmericanExpose.com. Research it for yourself. Look at it for yourself. I have a splitting headache. I can't do this anymore. I mean, looking at the computer, that is. But I will do this again. Well, let's go back once again. And I want to let you know there's numerous links for research that we've just put up. And the map, the biodiversity map by Dr. Michael Kaufman, is extremely important to connect that dot to that statement I read earlier and asking the question, are populations being moved to sustainable communities through weather modification? And then we have the Global Fire Monitoring Center in there, too. And then we have the map showing the layout where most humans will not be living where they are today if this is allowed to continue. And there's the connecting of the dots. And you know what? I've wanted that connection for so long, and it's finally come about. It's my fault, absolutely. I have no one to blame but myself. But I've always been one to work together with others. And that's extremely important to realize. And so, under this map, is the related to the map is the Convention on Biological Diversity. And that is a mouthful. The Convention on Biological Diversity is big. The United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change is about to be implemented very soon. It'll be 7 days before it goes into force. What does that mean, moving into force? I don't know. But the Convention on Biological Diversity is here for you to see. It's on the website, AmericanExpose.com. And the fact that roads are going to be taken out is there as well. In other words, vital to the implementation of the Wildlands Project will be the removal of roads. And that is something to behold as well. You learn about smart growth. You learn about how this is all being engineered. And here we have the Smart Growth Resource Library. smart growth online. And they talk about a 12-minute video providing an introduction to key design concepts of pedestrian-friendly development, including compact mixed-use development, pedestrian-oriented site design, and traditional neighborhood street design. The video displays developments in Wisconsin and covers a range of planning issues such as street design, public space, parking, development patterns, main street commercial areas, residential design, pedestrian bicycle access, and alternative modes of travel. It can be used on an informal basis by planners, neighborhood groups, and or professors to work with community residents on identifying the type of development they want and the plans, regulations, and actions needed to encourage such development. It's all accessible on the website, AmericanExpose.com, and certainly this came out of the Roadless Area section, Smart Growth Resource Library. Much going on, much implementation happening, and that's why, as I basically started out the broadcast tonight, I'm going to go down to the pages that I printed out earlier, entitled Big Media Won't Touch Agenda 21. It's worth hearing again until the program ends tonight, because at this juncture, this is the biggest blessing that I've had ever since I've been on the air. And evidently it comes from Rick Stanley. And that tells me a lot about Rick Stanley, listeners. Rick Stanley has got it together because of what I'm reading here by Nancy Levant. She states, I keep waiting and waiting and waiting for Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity or Oprah Winfrey or somebody, anybody who has daily access to the multitudes to say the words, Agenda 21. I'm waiting, and for the life of me, I don't understand the refusal to talk about the greatest threat to America that has ever existed. However, it dawns on me that wrapping a brain around Agenda 21 requires time, effort, interest, and a lot of diligence. No one told me about Agenda 21. I found it by accident on the Internet. Then I went to the UN's website and read Agenda 21. From there, I went to Buenos Aires, the President's Commission on Sustainable Development, and it's actually the President's Council on Sustainable Development, my local Sustainable Development Commissions and Planners, to local visioning commissions, ecology conglomerates, and then back to the UN. After about 6 months of reading about a whole lot of global, national, and philanthropic organizations, I started documenting and keeping running lists because I discovered Agenda 21 was huge, highly developed, and a done deal. How is it, I asked myself, that in 50 years I never heard of any of this before? Well, because it wasn't done in 50 years. Agenda 21 came into place in 1992. Where were my trusted newscasters? And why hasn't my president or the previous presidents ever talked about Agenda 21? The meetings in Buenos Aires and Agenda 21's connections to the World Trade Organization, the World Bank, and 1,000 other global organizations. So I kept researching the net, and lo and behold, I finally realized that Agenda 21 would never be publicized to Americans. It really can't be. As my running lists were now becoming encyclopedic, I also realized that there was no way to explain Agenda 21 easily. It's too big, profoundly sophisticated, intentionally masked and hidden by corporate agendas and ecological ideologies that are themselves exploited by corporate agendas. But more than that, I realized that for Americans to understand Agenda 21, they would have to come to terms with a truth that, I fear, they won't believe. What would that truth be? Let me try to say it in one sentence. Agenda 21 is the end of America. Agenda 21 is the end of America. As I read that sentence, I think, well, Nancy, now everyone is going to think you are an extremist and no one will believe anything you say from now on. Everyone knows there can be no end to America. But unfortunately, my dear Americans, there can be an end to America. For America is a way of life, the place on earth where we are, the beautiful and bountiful lands between Canada and Mexico. Might retain the name the United States of America, but I'm not even sure that is a given. If you believe even half of Agenda 21 and its dealings with the World Trade Organization, the World Bank, the President's Commission on Sustainable Development, the Commission on Global Governance, the World Conference on Global Governance, the Millennium Project, the Court of Criminal Justice, the Nature Conservancy, the World Summit on Sustainable Development, Smart Growth, and the visioning, training, and manipulation of American people, then you realize what has happened right under our noses over the past 35 years and without one national personality ever mentioning Agenda 21. So let me offer a list of website addresses to help readers research for themselves. I suggest you take notes and collect new website addresses. I believe that as Americans, we owe it to our history and our sense of ourselves to do the following. And certainly, I think Darren has this in place. I think Darren will do the right thing with it, either on his website or mine or Sweet Liberty. Read Agenda 21. If you read the other information via the web addresses in this article, you will wrap your brain around Agenda 21. It's unbelievable, and it's dastardly. Because not one politician or national media outlet has had the guts to tell us what is being taken from us. Pass your knowledge on to others. Don't stew and be paralyzed. Take your knowledge to churches, civic organizations, and any other groups or individuals who you can. And resolve yourselves to spread the news. Have an anti-Agenda 21 parade or day to draw attention to the cause. Without fail, it's the most important thing you will ever do in your lives as patriotic people. Did you hear what she said, listeners? Without fail, it is the most important thing you will ever do in your lives as patriotic people. Write to your representatives and tell them you know what they have hidden. Yes, they have hidden it. It's the best secret in the world. I've said this over and over and over again. And that their manipulations of American citizens are shameful. Do it. Try so very hard to homeschool your children. Public schools are governmental institutions embroiled in Agenda 21 and its plans for the United States and our children. As you read and study Agenda 21, you will see it alive, well, and operating most obviously in the public schools. You will see it clearly in the newest communities in all states across the country. Agenda 21 is everywhere, and it wants your children's intellects and value systems as well as your land and land rights. Finally, teach your children about Agenda 21, what it is, and what it is doing to their country. Children have unique wisdoms at every age. Teach them truth so they can faithfully and fearlessly speak truth. They must understand what is happening in their country. They cannot fight hidden and masked manipulations if they don't understand how and where they operate. Now is the time for Americans to help Americans. We cannot fight the loss of our rights unless we understand the game, and most Americans are totally unaware of what is happening to them and their communities. However, I do believe that the bulk of American people sense that something is amiss. Let's commit to them, our children, and our futures. Let's spread the news and make the media politicians talk. They have counted on our stupidity, our silence, and our laziness. They have even counted on us not really caring. We have to remember it's our government. It does not belong to politicians. They work for us. Unfortunately, they have not done that, and furthermore, they have advanced a worldwide mission without our knowledge. our votes, or even our opinions. So I say, one town at a time, here we come, and any elected official found to be complacent or a silent player in the Agenda 21 game needs to go. Agenda 21, learn all about it. And that is well done. I've waited so long for someone to do this. Finally, someone did. And it comes from Rick Stanley. Wonderful news that someone is connecting a dot to what's being implemented at Addison Honors. In Alabama, you have smart growth news. Well, they talk about a tree canopy saves millions in air pollution control, stormwater runoff expenses, covering about 67% of Jefferson County and the Cahuba River Basin in Shelby and St. Clair counties. The tree canopy saves their jurisdictions $117 million on measures to fight air pollution and another $131 million on measures to curb stormwater runoff. Concludes a study for the Stormwater Management Authority of Jefferson County, the first of its kind nationwide. Funded by $200,000 from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and recently presented to area mayors and urban forestry officials in Birmingham, reports Birmingham news writer Catherine Boma, the study says, quote, the reasons for planting and preserving trees are many. As the effects of urban sprawl escalate and more people are exposed to increasing air pollution and congested highways, end quote. With the green canopy absorbing ozone particles and other airborne contaminants, and the soil beneath soaking up rain, study authors calculated the forest environmental value in dollars by adding up the cost of several anti-pollution facilities and measures the area would otherwise need to reduce their air pollution, stormwater runoff, and flooding. The study advises the area's 26 cities to create tree preservation advocacy groups, planting plans and nurseries along a list of recommendation or recommended trees. This is dated December 17th, 2003, which is a good sign, meaning it's not being kept up to date. That is a good sign, and I don't see any latest news and information here. But you can certainly see what's being directed at us and on us. And this is extremely important to keep in mind, listeners, as we do our best to help wake up our country. The major understanding of what's being implemented with the Kyoto Protocol, with in a few hours, it'll be 7 days towards implementation. We see here, UN and partners open the world's first biodiversity park of its kind in Pakistan, dated 31 January, with last month's devastating Indian Ocean tsunami giving added urgency to environmental protection. The United Nations and its partners officially opened the first biodiversity park of its kind in the world in Morga, Pakistan. What is this biodiversity park going to be? Very limited human use area. Quote, in Asia and Pacific, conservation of biodiversity has assumed renewed importance after the recent tsunami, which destroyed considerable parts of the region's resources of biodiversity, such as forests, fish stocks, coral reefs, and mangrove swamps, end quote, the executive secretary of the Bangkok-based UN Economic and Social Commission for Asia and the Pacific, that's SCAP, Kim Hock Soo, told the gathering. Quote, efforts like the one in Morga can serve as models for restoring the biodiversity of devastated countries and help prevent further loss of the sustainable livelihoods of the people, end quote. What's he talking about here? That portion of the biodiversity the World Heritage Treaty, that portion of the World Heritage Treaty that I read to you earlier. They're going to set off portions of this country that has been decimated by the tsunami as World Heritage Sites. That's what he's talking about with the biodiversity park. He's talking about a World Heritage Site, listeners. The Morga Biodiversity Park Project, the brainchild of SCAP, that's the UN Economic Social Council, the UN Economic Social Commission for Asia and the Pacific, brings together participants from the private sector, national and local governments, and the local community, and aims to conserve endangered and important flora and fauna of the post-war region of Pakistan by ex-situ methods, created of awareness and dissemination of information on biodiversity conservation. A part of SCAP's pro-poor public-private partnership for poverty reduction, it follows the 2002 UN World Summit on Sustainable Development held in Johannesburg, South Africa. That was the 10-year anniversary of the Biodiversity Treaty and Agenda 21, listeners. I wasn't on the air at the time. Henceforth, nobody talked about it on the air. Isn't that amazing? Mr. Kim recommended the government of Pakistan and Atok Refinery Limited for the bold steps they had taken in pioneering the first public-private partnership in providing the poor with access to biodiversity. What does that actually mean? Also participating in the launch were Pakistani Minister of State for Economic Affairs Hina Rabbani Kahar and the Chief Executive Officer of Atok Refinery Limited, M. Razadin. Amazing. Absolutely amazing, people. I mean, the beat goes on. The mess is in place.